the hero's journey, I think, can be translated to many, many business leaders in their story, right? So when we think of the classic hero's journey, you are going on an adventure of some sort, right? But there are things that happen along the way, and then you are somehow changed or transformed. So if we think about that in the case of business, think about you as a business leader, maybe your journey in building your business, right? You set out to build a business. It was not easy. You encountered several obstacles along the way. And what are the things that you learned?
Welcome to the CEO Coaching International podcast. What we do on this show is we find the world's leading entrepreneurs and CEOs, and we spend about a half hour with them and really dig into their story. We want to understand the strategies and the tips and the tools that they use to make big happen in their business. And by the end of each episode, you'll have actionable ideas that you can implement on your path to big success. To learn more about CEO Coaching International and how we can help you dramatically grow your business, visit us at CEOCoachingInternational.com. People are not persuaded by information, but what moves people is telling a great story that makes your listener feel something. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the CEO Coaching International podcast. I'm your host, Steve Sandusky. And my guest today is Lakita Clear. Lakita is an international speaker, a public speaking coach, and the CEO of Clear Communication Academy. She has extensive experience working with CEOs, executives, entrepreneurs, Fortune 500 companies, public figures, and politicians in more than 50 countries across four continents, including many clients of CEO Coaching International. In today's show, Lakita breaks down the keys for leaders like you to become a better storyteller and improve your ability to persuade and influence. With that, please enjoy my conversation with Lakita Clear. Lakita, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
Well, it is great to have you here. I'm excited as well. This is a topic that I always enjoy talking about. We're going to be talking about storytelling for business leaders. But before we dig into that, I want to learn some more about you. Tell me a little bit about you, about your background, and how you got into this area of storytelling and media training.
Thank you so much. So I actually call myself a storytelling magician. I am obsessed with it. And I just wanted to take you back first to the beginning where I was actually studying to be an actor. So at the time when I was in college and studying to be an actor, I got chosen by a law firm to be one of five people to help train their trial attorneys. So this was kind of like my first foray into the business, helping them to understand storytelling, body language, connecting emotionally. So that was kind of my first, I would say, dive into things. And then I went back and actually did work in Hollywood. And I have to credit Hollywood for giving me most of my lessons about storytelling.
Well, so let's dig into this then. So storytelling for business leaders. And I think in this case, we're going to focus mostly on business. Many of the folks listening to this are entrepreneurs, they're CEOs. So let's just start with, why is it important? Why should a business leader care about being a better storyteller and spending some time trying to improve their storytelling skills?
That's a great question. And I think now that storytelling is essential. I don't even think it's something like a soft skill, because in the leadership position, I think it's so important that you are inspiring and motivating and that people are really able to connect to you. So this for me is of storytelling, is having people being able to relate to you, connect to you and be inspired. And like one of the traps that leaders often fall into is being that leader who is just delivering information, right? So they're delivering numbers or speaking to shareholders or speaking to employees with no emotion. So I think that adding stories gives us a chance to really raise the bar and go from delivering information to connecting.
So what are some different situations when a leader should be sharing a story or telling a story? So you mentioned one here, maybe they need to inspire them. Maybe there's a big change that the organization needs to make. So the leader needs to tell a story that's going to get people to really understand why we need to make this change and be excited about it. But are there some other examples or situations when it's appropriate for a leader to tell a story?
I think stories are always appropriate. So there's probably some listeners that are like, wait a minute, what? Yes. And I will say this, they're always appropriate, but we just need to understand how to use them, right? So in some situations, perhaps you might use a very, very short story in even a meeting. Maybe it's your weekly meeting and you are using a 30-second story just to get people engaged. So that would be one example of a scenario that you could use a story. Then you have other scenarios. Maybe you're kicking off a company event and you have 10 minutes to talk. And in that case, you might use a longer story. But I think you can understand, and it's important for leaders to understand this, how can we use stories in various lengths or getting to sort of various degrees of emotion depending on what we want to achieve, right? So the story you're going to use in a business meeting or with shareholders is going to be different than the story that you are going to use when you have 15 minutes and it's all about inspiration.
So let's also talk about what is a story. I want to make sure that we're all on the same page here. So we know, you know, beginning, middle, end, that sort of thing. But can you give me how you define a story? You've got the Hollywood background. So, you know, we know stories and movies, that sort of thing. But in the context here for business leaders, how would you describe what a story is?
I think a story is an experience or a collection of experiences that brings us to some sort of emotion. So the emotion doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be sad or anything like that, but it's an experience. So when I say experience, you can be detailing the fact that you remember being at this company event last year and an employee coming up to you and telling you how much this event meant to them. That's a story, right? I just detailed a story about an employee coming up to me at last year's event and explaining how important it was to them or what it meant to them. And maybe I'm using something that simple to connect at the beginning of an event. So for me, it's just an experience that I'm relaying.
And where can we find these stories? So do we want to be telling stories, our own personal experience stories? Do we want to be resharing somebody else's experience or somebody else's stories? Where do we find these stories?
I think both can be very, very powerful. I love personal stories because personal stories are what makes us unique, right? If 10 leaders are all in the same industry and doing the same thing, your personal experiences and stories are what are going to help people really connect to you and your company. So I love those. But I think it's important for us to think about maybe themes, right? So there are sometimes common themes or words or ideas that you can start building stories around or finding stories. So let me give you an example. If we just take the word leadership, there are several stories that probably most leaders have around leadership. So now if you think of, okay, leadership. What has been my experience with leadership? When did I realize that I was a leader? Where was it that I sort of fell short in the beginning of my career? So if we sort of base these things around themes, this is how we can create personal stories. But don't be afraid also to take other stories that are in the marketplace. You don't have to only rely on your own personal stories, although they are powerful.
And if we are telling a personal story, how personal should we get with that story?
That depends on what you are trying to achieve. I think before you are telling stories or deciding what story to tell, you have to understand what you are trying to do. What is your goal, right? So if I say that my goal in this meeting is truly just to be relatable, right? And to show people that I have come from exactly where they have come from. Maybe in that particular story, I'm going to get a little bit more vulnerable. I'm going to showcase a little bit more because the purpose there is to really connect and to show, you know, sort of that rise to the top. So in this situation, I would share. If I'm doing a presentation or a pitch for investors, I may not get that vulnerable. I might just tell a story around how I came up with the business idea or our humble beginnings, if that makes sense.
It does. And how about how specific should we get in the story? And what I mean by that is maybe there's a concern that if I get too specific, people aren't going to be able to relate to it. Or maybe the more specific I get, the more universal the story actually is, because more people can relate to it. So is there anything counterintuitive in there, or how specific should we get?
With this question, I always think back to some of my early Hollywood days. And one of the sayings that we said a lot was, start your story as late as possible. And that means simply that we don't need so many details of leading into it in the beginning. We need to start in a position where we can kind of throw people immediately into the story. So I think of it like this for business leaders. What details do I need in your story to understand where you're going, or what details do you need to push the story forward, right? So as you're thinking through your story, or if you've written it down, you think, do I need all of these details to move the story forward? If the answer is no, then that means you probably have too many details. Can you remove five of them and I still completely understand what's going on and I still feel the same emotion? Once you've gotten to the emotion, that's it. You've done your job. You don't need all of the details and what color you were wearing and what exactly somebody's job title was, unless that's relevant.
Let's say that I am trying to persuade my audience, or I'm trying to influence my audience to either change a behavior or to take a certain action or to maybe embrace something that the organization is trying to do. Is there any kind of sequence, I'm going to call it, in terms of how you tell the story? And what I mean by that is, maybe in the story, we need to share some information. Maybe we need to share some facts. Maybe I want to tell a personal example. So as we think about the different components of how I'm going to use a story to influence the behavior, is there any way that I should think about how I sequence the actual telling of that story so that it has maximum impact on the audience?
Yeah, I think in this particular situation, it feels like a classic before and after, meaning what was the before situation? If you are, say, you're trying to persuade someone to change to your software, your accounting software, what was sort of the before of your personal story or stories of customers, right? Before they were using the accounting software and after. So this is actually a great case in terms of structuring your beginning, middle, and end, where you show them what the world looked like before this solution, right? And then after this solution, this is what the world looks like. So it's almost like when you see those movies or Hero's Journey, right? You're overcoming something. And after that, the world looks so much better. So you really need to take us to that lower point, right? And then the payoff is even higher at the end. So that would be one thing that I think is important, because I think there's one place that leaders often forget to sort of structure their story for maximum impact. And it is that we are afraid to get vulnerable sometimes. So we're moving along in the story and we're forgetting that initial setup so that I can understand that conflict. Nobody wants to hear a story that's just, you're just rolling on cloud nine the whole time, right? So you really need to make sure that you have that beginning part that is like the before and then the after in order to persuade people, I think.
Is it fair to say that if there's no conflict, there's no story?
I think I love you after that comment.
Okay.
So this is absolutely true. There's no such story without a conflict. If you have ever seen a movie and you didn't figure out what the conflict was, you either said that movie was terrible or you didn't even complete the movie, right?
Right.
That's true.
Yeah. So, and maybe along those lines, I heard you use the phrase, the hero's journey. So that takes me back to Joseph Campbell, who wrote a book called The Power of Myth, where he really started to explore this whole idea of the hero's journey. And I know people like, I think, Steven Spielberg and maybe some of these great filmmakers, Star Wars, that sort of thing, they really kind of went back to some of the work that Campbell had done in terms of telling these stories. Anything along those lines, like the hero's journey, I'd love for you to expand a little bit on that and how that concept was applied in Hollywood, since you've got the Hollywood background? And then maybe, are there any lessons we can learn from that that directly apply to a business leader in terms of how they need to be thinking about their stories and how they need to be thinking about the hero's journey?
The hero's journey, I think, can be translated to many, many business leaders in their story, right? So when we think of the classic hero's journey, you are going on an adventure of some sort, right? But there are things that happen along the way, and then you are somehow changed or transformed. So if we think about that in the case of business, think about you as a business leader, maybe your journey in building your business, right? You set out to build a business. It was not easy. You encountered several obstacles along the way. And what are the things that you learned? So that is one way that it can be applied to, I think, leadership, is just that sort of entrepreneur journey and building your business and how you were changed. And also, I think it's deeper than that. It's even when you think about your personal brand, right? As leaders, how have you been changed? What are the lessons that you've learned that we can sort of put into a hero's journey story? Have you learned to find more work-life balance? And how did you learn that lesson? Was it in an easy way? Did you have to learn the hard way? And how have you been transformed to even be a better leader by taking that balance? So there are several ways you can apply this in leadership.
This idea of having an origin story for your company, I think, has been popularized from Silicon Valley going back many decades. Of course, we hear all these stories about companies that were started in a garage. Is that something important for a leader to have, is to have an origin story like that, or should we not worry about that?
I think you should have it for sure. I think you should have it. People want to understand those stories. And when you understand those stories about a leader, I think you connect to that leader on such a deep level. I remember listening to, I believe it was Howard Schultz, and he was running Starbucks, as most people know. And he had this most amazing interview where he told this story about his father. So he kind of told an origin story about his father and kind of detailed what his father went through when he got injured on the job. And then he directly related it to him being able to work for a company years later that would have such an impact on his life and was essentially the type of company his father never got a chance to work for. So that was an origin story. And listening to that in that particular interview gave me more insight about him than I ever had. So it's essential.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Howard Schultz, because I think he is one of the world's best storytellers. And for folks listening to this, I would encourage you to go back and listen to an interview that he did. I believe it was on the How I Built This podcast, I think, with Guy Raz. And he tells a story about back in, like, I think it was 2008, 2009, when at the beginning of that economic crisis, Starbucks was in a world of hurt. So he tells this whole story about how he had to come back into the company and really rally the troops. It's just an amazing story. But with that said, I'd love for you to tell me, who else out there that we might all recognize do you think is a great storyteller? And what do you think makes them a great storyteller?
I think Oprah's a fantastic storyteller. She's a fantastic storyteller. And one of the things that I love about the way Oprah tells stories, first of all, she's not afraid to be vulnerable. She's not afraid to let you in a little bit on her life. So you have this larger than life figure, Oprah, but somehow she talks and she tells stories and you feel like you can connect to her and you can relate to her. So I think she does such a great job of also telling little stories. It's not just one big, huge origin story and that's it. You can see her accepting an award. She has a great story that she brings you into an experience from childhood. You can see her talking about her foundation and she has a story about that. She is constantly using stories and listening to her, even the way she delivers them. That's the next level, though. It's like the way you have the story and then you deliver it. So I would say Oprah, for me, is a great example of a storyteller.
Excellent. All right. Now, how about practicing a story? Or should we think proactively and say, okay, I need to come up with 5 different stories, and here are different scenarios where I might want to tell this story. So I'm being proactive. I'm identifying the stories. A, should we do that? And B, How much should we practice the story? Should we actually write out the whole story word for word so we know exactly what the story looks like? And when we're telling the story, are we recalling a script of that story, or do we want to be in the moment? How should we think about creating these different stories and then actually practicing and telling the stories?
I think it is a great idea to have a handful of stories in your back pocket. So I think it would be great to identify the types of themes that you may be speaking about in order to tell a story, right? Because then you're not just coming up with stories off the top of your head that don't relate to anything. So you might say, okay, things that I think I'm speaking about a lot, I'm speaking about leadership. Maybe you're speaking about YPO. Maybe you're speaking about company culture. Maybe you're speaking about change. Then you take those things and you think, okay, what are the short stories that I can create? Then you think of what are the different scenarios that I can use these in? By identifying those and having those five in your back pocket, then it becomes very, very easy to pull them out when you need and even to adjust them based on the audience, right? It's the same story. The same story can be told in a myriad of ways, right? So that's the first part. And then when it comes to practicing, I do think it's important to really practice the structure of your story. So if you can, this is like best case scenario, but few people will probably do it. It's great at one point in your life if you write out a story. Why? Because if you do that at least once in your life, then you understand structure and you understand how to be concise. And then after that, when you're telling the story, just be in the moment and bring us into that story. You don't need to read it. But it is nice if you can practice it by writing it down or just speaking it aloud and saying, okay, this is my setup. This is the conflict. This is what happened during sort of the meat of my story. And this is how I was changed in the conclusion. If you don't remember anything else, you remember your setup, your conflict, what sort of happened in the meat of your story and how you were changed. Those are the points of your story.
And there is such a huge difference between an average storyteller and an amazing storyteller. So I've heard a lot of speakers over the years. And when someone is a great storyteller, you are just so wrapped up in the story and how it's making you feel. And you walk away from that presentation or listening to that podcast and you think, wow, that was an amazing story. And I could really grab into that in terms of relating that to maybe to my own type of personal experience. So it's absolutely worth, you know, putting the time in to come up with those stories, to really practice those stories and hone those stories, and it'll have a major impact on your listeners.
Yeah, I think that's so true. It makes me think of this Maya Angelou quote where she says that I've learned that people will forget what you said, people will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel. And that's the power of storytelling, because you're not telling me a story, you are making me feel a story. And that is the difference.
Right. So we've been talking about how to tell stories, when to tell stories. How about some of the mistakes that you've seen people make when it comes to storytelling?
One of the mistakes that I've seen people make is that they don't understand how to relate their story to the situation. So they come out with this great story and you're sitting there in the audience thinking, what does that have to do with anything of what you're talking about, right? They bring you to a conference and you're one of the speakers in the lineup and you haven't thought of how to really relate your story to the theme or how to even have takeaways. What are the takeaways for the audience? So I think that's another mistake that I see is people don't understand the takeaways. And then another big mistake that I see, and this simply comes from not practicing, is that people don't understand the delivery of it. And we know that the delivery is even more important than just the content of the story. And so you spend so much time thinking through what you are going to say, but you never practice how you're going to say it. So the story falls a little bit flat and you're not able to really excite us and bring us on a journey when you actually deliver it.
That last piece, I think, is really a good point there in terms of the actual delivery, because I remember a person who I had heard this person speak many times, and oftentimes they would tell a particular story. But there were certain times when this person told that story, like the punchline in the story, that when they got the timing right of the delivery of that, there was a huge laughter from the audience. But at other times, when they just rushed through that point, it fell flat. And it, I mean, it's just amazing how just the same words, but just the timing of the delivery. And in this case, it was having a pause in there and then delivering the punchline got the big laugh. But when the person rushed right through it, people just kind of missed it. And it was a little bit of a muffled laugh. So really practicing that delivery is so crucial.
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen that a lot of times. And then I've seen some people that I've literally just gotten lost into their story where I said, oh, wow. Or they just brought so many emotions that I was just enthralled, right?
Right. Now, without maybe getting too detailed here, let's just talk for a second about the delivery. So things like having a pause, things like not speaking too fast. What are some other components of the delivery that we really need to be mindful of in order to deliver the most impactful story?
The tone. So when we think about vocal delivery, we think about pausing, we think about tone, we think about rate of speaking, we think about volume. All of these things make up the delivery if we think about just vocally, but the tone is hugely important. And what I mean by that is we have an emotional tone. You can take one sentence and you can say it in 10 different ways and it has a different meaning, right? And so this is what I think is important. Oftentimes leaders are telling stories and because they sort of have this corporate monotone the whole time, I don't even know how they feel about the story. Were they excited by that part? Was this part made them feel sad at the time? And if you think about that emotional tone and you change that, I should be able to close my eyes and understand the flow or be able to go on a journey with you just from hearing your tone and your intonations.
Let's switch gears here for just a minute. And I know you are now working with CEO Coaching International and doing work with some of the clients of the firm. So tell me a little bit more about your role and the kind of work that you're doing with the clients of CEO Coaching International.
Yeah, so I'm really excited about this new relationship because I've worked with several of the people at CEO Coaching International and also the clients. So it's been an amazing journey. And now some of the clients that I work with, we work in a variety of aspects. So some of them, we are working on improving general communication skills and helping them, for example, to get these stories, to have a roadmap, to start building out there are 5, 6, 7 stories that we were saying that they need to have in their back pocket. So that's what a lot of clients work on. And then I have some clients now over the past, I would say a year and a half or throughout the pandemic have really been working on trying to improve and level up their virtual communication skills. So we work on virtual communication skills, being dynamic in front of the camera as more and more CEOs are working on putting themselves on video. This for me is my specialty because I worked both in front of and behind the camera. So understanding those camera skills. And then a lot of it is corporate communication. So some of it may be corporate communication and team building and things that they can do with their team or giving effective feedback, things like that. So I would say most of them are pretty well-rounded. I love the client base, but public speaking, storytelling, virtual and on camera happen to be very popular right now.
So with the virtual presentations, for a lot of folks, that was relatively new. What have you seen is like the biggest problem that a lot of these leaders have when it comes trying to deliver something virtually?
Most of the leaders have the problem of not truly being able to connect through camera. And there's several reasons behind that. One is it's just a different medium, right? When we think about how if you're in front of Zoom, for example, and I tell you to make eye contact, well, what do? That's a little bit weird to make eye contact, right? Do you stare into the camera and then you feel awkward, right? And then you don't see other people. So that would be one of them is I think they're just having a hard time connecting for that reason. I also think that people are not continuously raising the bar on how to keep their team engaged because you think I have the same meetings, or you use the excuse of, well, it's my same executive team. We have a meeting every week. So you think that means you don't need to be innovative, but you do. So I think there's a chance for CEOs to raise the bar on how they are engaging their team. If you have an hour-long meeting, that's a long time in a virtual setting. What are the things that you've prepared to keep people engaged, to keep people wanting to really participate in that meeting?
Yeah. And with the technology that we have, like you and I are having this conversation over Zoom right now, things like the breakout rooms, the chat functions, the Q&A boxes, the whiteboards, those sorts of things. I mean, being able to engage people virtually, the tools are there. It's just if people are learning how to use those tools and actively using those tools. So along those lines, let's just say that the leader is doing like an all company presentation and they're doing it. Let's say they're using Zoom, for example, and it's going to be like an hour long event. Do you have any rules of thumb in terms of how frequently we need to ask the viewers to engage in some way, whether it's to post something in the chat box or to take a poll or something like that? Are there any rules of thumb for how long, you know, we can go before we really need to engage the audience in something proactive?
I think you need to be engaging the audience continuously. So maybe every 10 minutes at the very least. The attention span that we have in a virtual setting is about 5-10 minutes. And the longer the meeting goes, the less that even applies. So I think every 10 minutes, you need to be thinking about that. But if you set your meeting up in the correct way, I think from the beginning, then it's a little bit easier. So it's important to understand that you can't set up your virtual meetings in the same way that you would set up your in-person meetings. It doesn't work. It's a different set of skills that you need virtually. And that's from the tech tools to even just your personal presence, because you can have all the tech tools in the world, but if your personal presence is not dynamic on camera, then it's not going to be as exciting and engaging. So I think we need to understand how to just structure them from the beginning. What is the type of icebreaker that you're doing? What are the type of meeting roles that you are assigning in a virtual setting so that people feel engaged even when they're not talking, because they have something to do, they have a job. So I think there's a lot of creative ways to constantly keep people engaged in a meeting.
Excellent. All right, Lakita. Well, as we get ready to wrap up here, just a couple more things. One is there anything else that you want to add here that we haven't talked about, or even reiterate something we've already talked about?
Yes, there is a quote that always sticks into my mind, and it is that communication works for those who work at it. And it stands out to me so much because I see most of the leaders that are constantly thinking of so many things that they need to work on because they have so many things on their plates at the end of the year and the investors and the sales, but there's so little time that's spent on communication. And I think it should be even the other way around. You need to make an effort, a continuous effort, to work on your communication, work on your public speaking, work on your storytelling skills. And that is the way you are going to be able to make improvements.
Excellent. All right. Well, let's wrap up here with a few rapid fire questions. So the first one, yeah, you ready?
We'll
put you on the hot seat here. All right. Well, let's start with some personal core values. So can you share maybe two or three of yours?
Keep your word no matter what. Giving 150%, even if no one else would know that you gave less. And to limit complaining. I think that's a value that I have as well.
All right. Three good ones there. How about a leader that you admire? This could be someone that you personally know, or maybe someone that you just admire from afar. And why do you admire them?
Can I say Oprah again? Because she's...
we only get one Oprah per podcast.
Okay. Well, let me think who else that I admire. I really liked watching Steve Jobs. Mm-hmm. Watching him speak and a lot of the launches he did. And he was also a great storyteller. He told stories so much and had great moments of vulnerability. So I loved a lot of the things that he achieved.
Well, let's just go a little deeper on that one if we could. So you mentioned some of the vulnerability that he showed. Is there anything else that he did that you think made him a particularly effective storyteller?
Yeah. So one of the things that I think that he had the ability to do quickly, and I'm talking about first 30, 60 seconds, is to make you feel that he was just a normal guy. So if anybody saw his Stanford speech, in the first 30, 60 seconds, he spoke about that was the closest he had ever been to a college graduation. Everybody started laughing. And you suddenly were like, wow, he's not this big, larger than life figure. He's a human who is flawed. So I think he always did a good job of that.
Since you mentioned Steve Jobs, I'd love to talk about charisma for a minute. So if we want to be a great storyteller, do we need to be charismatic, or is that not even something that we need to be concerned about?
Okay, well, look, charisma is great. So it's great to have charisma. But I will say this, there are people who can tell great stories who are not necessarily as charismatic as the next person. Some people have a fun, dry sense of humor, but they're not in an outwardly sort of charismatic way. They're not that. So yes, it's great to have charisma, but not everybody does have charisma, and you can still develop, if you understand how to tell a good story, you can still develop great storytelling skills without it.
Well, that's good to hear. So there's hope for people like me. All right, let's do one final rapid fire question here. How about a book? We love talking about books here. We love reading books. Is there a book that you're particularly fond of?
Oh my goodness. I'm going to have to go with Who Moved My Cheese?
All right. An oldie but a goodie.
Yes. So this is actually an interesting story. I just read this book during the pandemic. A client of mine and friend, dear friend, said, you should read this book. So I got this book. I was so excited to get it from Amazon. I drove to my favorite coffee shop, got my matcha, my favorite morning drink. I sat in my car and I said, I'm going to read one chapter of this. Do you know, I sat in my car and I read the entire book.
Yep.
I did not move.
I totally believe that. It's a great book.
I just absolutely loved it. And it was so timely for me during the middle of a pandemic and so many things that were happening and changing with my business that I was hooked. I sat there and I said, oh my goodness, I've read the whole book. I need to get to work, because it was like right before work. And that for me was the power of that book. I immediately gifted that book to about three people. And then I posted about it. It had such a powerful impact on me.
Excellent. All right, Lakita, well, I think we will go ahead and wrap it up there. So what's the best way for folks to reach out and connect with you if they want to learn more or perhaps engage your services?
Yes. So they can reach out through CEO Coaching International. I'm also on LinkedIn at Lakita Clear. And my company is also on LinkedIn, Clear Communication Academy. We try to post a lot of fun articles, videos, things like that.
Excellent. All right. Well, I appreciate you taking some time here. And for all of you listening, you can get all the information, the show notes, and the links by going to CEOCoachingInternational.com. Lakita, again, thank you. Great material here, great insights, and look forward to having you part of the CEO Coaching International family.
Thank you so much, Steve. I really appreciate you doing this interview with me, and I look forward to meeting you in person soon.
That's right. All right. Take care.
All right. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Now, I have a question for you. How are you going to implement and benefit from the ideas that you hear on our show? Well, we would love to have a conversation with you about that. So please visit us at CEOCoachingInternational.com. We can then set up a call, and we can talk about how we can help you make big happen in your business. Thanks, and we look forward to sharing our next episode with you.